Right, happy Halloween from VOA One The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, Dan Novak tells us about tragedies that struck over the weekend in India and South Korea. John Russell presents this week's Health and Lifestyle Report. We close with the next part of our U.S. history series. But first, here is Dan Novak.
India and South Korea are mourning and searching for answers after weekend disasters that left hundreds of people killed. Saturday, more than 150 people were crushed to death at a crowded Halloween celebration in Seoul. The next day, a bridge collapse in India killed at least 133 people. The South Korean disaster took place in the narrow roads of Seoul's Itaewon neighborhood. The area has many places for drinking, dancing, and other nightlife. Tens of thousands of people flooded into Itaewon Saturday. Witnesses and survivors remembered a hell-like chaos when the crowd surged and people began to fall as they tried to escape. The witnesses said the entire Itaewon area was very crowded with vehicles and people. This made it very difficult for rescuers to get to those in need. Police said they have created a 475-member group to investigate the crush. Officers have received videos taken by security cameras in the area and are looking at video clips posted on social media. The police told reporters that officers have interviewed more than 40 witnesses so far. Other police officers said they are trying to find exactly when and where the crowd surge started and how it got worse. They said a team of police officers searched the Itaewon area on Monday. The government will thoroughly investigate the cause of the incident and do its best to make necessary improvements of systems to prevent a similar accident, South Korean Prime Minister Han Duk-soo said at a government meeting about the disaster. Some witnesses said the surge was caused by people in the upper part of the road pushing others farther down the hill. Local media also questioned an apparent lack of safety preparations for the large crowd expected to gather in Itaewon. Seoul police deployed 137 officers to control the large crowd. As of Monday morning, the government said it had identified 153 of the 154 dead. It said 149 other people are injured, 33 of them seriously. The bridge that collapsed Sunday in the Indian town of Morbi, Gujarat state, was 143 years old. Officials are still searching for possible victims. Police said Monday they had arrested 9 people in connection with the event. The bridge was built by the British in the late 1800s and was called an engineering marvel. It had been closed for repair work for several months earlier this year. It reopened 4 days before the collapse. Indian Inspector General Ashok Yadav said police have formed a special investigative team. He said it had arrested employees of the bridge's operator, Areva Group. "We won't let the guilty get away. We won't spare anyone," Yadav said. Gujarat authorities opened a case against Areva for suspected culpable homicide, attempted culpable homicide, and other violations. The company had reopened the bridge, which crosses a wide part of the Machchu River, on October 26th. That is the first day of the Gujarati New Year, which falls during the Hindu festival season. The newly reopened bridge drew hundreds of people. A Morbi city official told the Indian Express newspaper the company had reopened the bridge without first getting a fitness certificate. That claim could not be independently confirmed. Officials said the structure collapsed under the weight of hundreds of people. Security camera videos showed the bridge shaking violently and people trying to hold on to its cables. Then the walkway gave way and crashed into the river. State Minister Harsh Sanghvi told reporters that 133 people were confirmed dead, and many others were admitted to hospitals in serious condition. Rescue teams worked overnight to search for survivors. It was not clear exactly how many people were on the bridge when it collapsed, but survivors said it was so crowded that people were unable to quickly move to safety when its cables began to break. A Gujarat state government election is expected in coming months. Opposition parties have demanded an investigation into the collapse. Asia has seen three major disasters involving large crowds in a month. In Indonesia, 132 people were killed after police fired tear gas at a crowd during a soccer match October 1st. It caused a surge as people tried to flee. I'm Dan Novak.
Lauren Nichols has been suffering from bad health effects since her COVID-19 infection in the spring of 2020. The 34-year-old worker for the U.S. Department of Transportation in Boston has had problems with thinking and attention. She has also suffered from tiredness, seizures, headaches, and pain. Last June, Nichols' doctor suggested she take small amounts of naltrexone, a drug often used to treat alcohol and opioid addiction. The result, she said, was that after more than 2 years of living in a thick cloud, I can actually think clearly. Researchers are studying treatments for the long-lasting effects of COVID infections, known as long COVID. They are excited to learn if naltrexone can offer similar helpful effects to millions of people suffering from health problems months after a coronavirus infection. Reuters studied information from clinicaltrials.gov and spoke to 12 health researchers about long COVID. The news agency found that there are at least 4 special studies known as clinical trials that plan to test naltrexone in hundreds of patients with long COVID. Naltrexone is also one of a few treatments to be tested in the U.S. National Institutes of Health's $1 billion RECOVER initiative. Advisors to the effort say the aim is to learn more about causes of long COVID and to find treatments. Unlike treatments aimed at symptoms caused by COVID damage to organs, such as the lungs, low-dose naltrexone, or LDN, may reverse some of the problems that are creating symptoms, they said. Naltrexone has anti-inflammatory properties and has been used in low doses for years to treat conditions such as fibromyalgia, Crohn's disease, and multiple sclerosis, said Dr. Jared Younger of the Neuroinflammation, Pain, and Fatigue Laboratory at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. At 50 milligrams, 10 times the low dose, Naltrexone is approved to treat opioid and alcohol addiction. Several drug manufacturers sell 50 milligram pills, but low-dose naltrexone must be purchased through a special drugstore. Younger wrote a scientific study of the drug as an anti-inflammatory. In September, he put in a grant application to study LDN for long COVID. It should be at the top of everyone's list for clinical trials, he said. Still, the drug is unlikely to help all patients with long COVID. The condition includes about 200 symptoms, including pain and heart issues, sleep problems, and thinking problems. Dr. Jack Lambert is an infectious disease expert at University College Dublin School of Medicine. He advised the use of LDN to other doctors treating patients who were suffering from symptoms after COVID. It worked so well that he ran a study among 38 long COVID patients. They reported improvements in energy, pain, concentration, sleep, and overall recovery from COVID-19 after 2 months, findings published in July said. Lambert is planning a larger study to confirm those results. He said LDN might repair damage caused by the disease rather than hide its symptoms. Other planned LDN trials include one by the University of British Columbia in Vancouver and a study by Ageless Rx, a new company based in Ann Arbor, Michigan. That study of 36 volunteers should have results by the end of this year, said company co-founder Sajed Zelzela. Scientists are still working to explain exactly how LDN might work. Reports say Recover officials are considering other possible treatments for long COVID. These include antiviral drugs, such as Pfizer's Paxlovid, blood-thinning drugs, steroids, and nutritional supplements. Recover officials said they have received many proposals but could not comment on which drugs will be tested until trials are finalized. Nichols, a patient advisor to Recover, was very happy when she learned LDN was being considered for the government-supported studies. While LDN has not cured all of her COVID-related problems, Nichols can now work all day without breaks and have a social life at home. It has made me feel like a human again, she said. I'm John Russell.
Thank you, John. Now, here is a question about John's report. Try to choose the correct answer. What is naltrexone commonly used to treat? A. Infections, B. Cancer, or C. Addiction? The answer is C. Addiction. Let's listen to that part of the report again.
Last June, Nichols' doctor suggested she take small amounts of naltrexone, a drug often used to treat alcohol and opioid addiction.
You can try to answer more questions about John Russell's report by visiting our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
From VOA Learning English, welcome to The Making of a Nation. I'm Steve Ember. John Quincy Adams was sworn in as President of the United States on March 4th, 1825. A big crowd came to the Capitol building for the ceremony. All the leaders of government were there, senators, congressmen, Supreme Court justices, and James Monroe. Monroe's two terms as president were ending. President-elect Adams focused his inaugural address on unity. Adams said, "The Constitution and the representative democracy of the United States had proved a success. The nation was free and strong and stretched across the continent from the Atlantic Ocean to the Pacific." He noted that during the past 10 years, political party differences had eased. So now, he said, it was time for the people to settle their differences and make a truly national government. Adams closed his speech by recognizing that he was a minority president. No candidate had received a majority of electoral votes. So the House of Representatives had to make the decision. The House chose Adams as the next president. He told the crowd gathered at the Capitol that he needed the help of everyone in the years to come. Presidents-elect used to give their inaugural address before their swearing in. So after his speech, John Quincy Adams took the oath of office that made him the sixth president of the United States. His father was John Adams, the second president. John Quincy's mother, Abigail, made sure he received an excellent education. Historian Harlow Giles Unger wrote a biography of John Quincy Adams. Quincy, incidentally, is how the family pronounced it. The historian tells this story about Abigail Adams and her son in 1775 in Massachusetts during the Revolutionary War.
When her firstborn son, John Quincy, was seven, they heard the cannon fire in the distance. They went up to the top of the hill behind their farmhouse and could look across Boston Harbor and see the Battle of Bunker Hill. And she took her boy by the hand. They went back down to the house, and she started melting down the family pewter with John Quincy helping her. And making musket balls for the American Revolutionary troops.
Abigail and John Adams were strong patriots. They were one of the founding families of America. Harlow Giles Unger says Abigail Adams raised John Quincy to serve his country.
She told her son that if you do not grow up to be a great leader of this country, it will be because of your own laziness and obstinacy. She and her husband, John Adams, at that point decided to raise their son to be the President of the United States.
As a boy, John Quincy Adams learned to speak at least four languages and read Greek and Latin. He studied Shakespeare's plays. He traveled in Europe. He worked with his father in American consulates and embassies. He graduated from Harvard and was working as a lawyer by the age of 23.
He was a brilliant, brilliant young boy and man.
For about 25 years, Adams held mostly appointed jobs. He was ambassador to the Netherlands, Germany, Russia, and Britain. He helped lead the negotiations that ended the War of 1812 between Britain and the United States. And he served 8 years as Secretary of State. Adams spent most of his career working in public service. Harlow Giles Unger says he could be impatient, especially with lawmakers.
He despised most of the politicians he met in Congress because he found them to be ignorant and self-serving, with no sense of patriotism and sense of obligation to the nation.
John Quincy Adams did not care for political battles. When he became president, he tried to bring his political opponents and the different parts of the country together in his cabinet. His opponents, however, refused to serve. And although his cabinet included Southerners, he did not really have the support of the South. In his first message to Congress, President Adams described his ideas about the national government. The chief purpose of the government, he said, was to improve the lives of the people it governed. To do this, he offered a national program of building roads and canals. He also proposed a national university and a national scientific center. Adams said Congress should not be limited only to making laws to improve the nation's economic life. He said it should make laws to improve the arts and sciences, too. Many people of the West and South did not believe that the Constitution gave the federal government the power to do all these things. They believed that these powers belonged to the states. Their representatives in Congress rejected Adams' proposals. Harlow Giles Unger says some of the disagreements during Adams' presidency helped start the American Civil War more than 30 years later in 1861.
The country was now splitting. The South, most of the South, had never accepted the Constitution as such. The Constitution did away with state sovereignty, but many Americans never accepted that, and especially in the South.
The political picture in the United States began to change during the administration of John Quincy Adams. His opponents won control of both houses of Congress in the elections of 1826. Adams' opponents called themselves Democrats. They supported Andrew Jackson and wanted him to win the next presidential election. Democrats needed the support of both the West and the South to elect Jackson. So they proposed a bill that appeared to help the West. The bill involved import taxes. A number of Western states wanted duties on industrial goods imported from other countries. The purpose was to protect their own industries. Southern states, however, opposed the import duties. They produced no industrial goods that needed protection. They argued that the Constitution did not give the government in Washington the right to approve such taxes. The Democrats expected Congress to defeat the bill they proposed. They thought the West would be grateful that the Democrats had tried to help them, and the South would be happy that there would be no import taxes. But to the Democrats' surprise, many congressmen from the Northeast joined with lawmakers from the West to support the bill. They did so even though the bill would harm industries in the Northeast. The Northerners wanted to keep the idea of protective trade taxes alive. The bill passed in both the House of Representatives and the Senate. This left President Adams with a difficult decision. Should he sign it into law, or should he veto it? If he signed the bill, it would show he believed that the Constitution allowed protective duties. That decision would create even more opposition to him in the South. If he vetoed it, then he would lose support in the West and Northeast. Adams signed the bill, but he made clear that Congress was fully responsible for it. Democrats in Congress made other attempts to weaken support for Adams. For example, they claimed that he was misusing government money. They tried to show that he and his father before him had become rich from government service. Others accused him of giving government jobs to his supporters. This charge was false. Top administration officials had urged Adams to give government jobs only to men who were loyal to him. But Adams had refused. He felt that as long as someone had done nothing wrong, he should continue in his job. During his 4 years as president, Adams removed 12 people from government jobs. In each case, the person had failed to do his work or had done something criminal. Adams often gave jobs to people who did not support him politically. He believed it was wrong to give a person a job just for political reasons. Many of Adams' supporters could not understand. They had worked hard to get him elected. Their support for him cooled. Historian Harlow Giles Unger says, John Quincy Adams was never able to meet the high expectations many had for him.
His presidency was a complete failure. He was able to accomplish nothing.
The political battle between Adams' Republican Party and Jackson's Democrats remained bitter. Perhaps the worst fighting took place in the press. Each side had its own newspaper for support. The Daily National Journal supported the administration. The United States Telegraph supported Andrew Jackson. At first, the pro-administration newspaper called for national unity and an end to personal attacks. Then things changed. The paper had to defend against charges of political wrongdoing within Adams' party. It needed to turn readers away from these problems. So it printed a pamphlet that had been used against Andrew Jackson during an election campaign. The pamphlet accused Jackson of many bad things. The most damaging part involved the wife of another man. I'm Steve Ember, inviting you to join us next time for The Making of a Nation, American History from VOA Learning English.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.